keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
a dancer for money. And any old music will do.
7:02 on a Thursday. It's training camp Thursday here at Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks get things underway in Abbotsford later today. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650 all day as we give you all the live and latest reportage from Canucks camp. There was a lot to digest yesterday. Nothing groundbreaking, nothing huge, but a lot of factoids and a lot of information thrown our way as the unofficial official start of training camp happened yesterday with medicals and media availability. We'll be joined by Thomas Drantz in just 1 minute to discuss all of that. Before we do, two great companies to tell you about. The first, you know them, you love them, the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Three locations to serve you better. North Shore Acura, that's in the North Shore Auto Mall. Acura of Langley, that's in the Langley Bypass. And Burrard Acura on 730 Terminal Avenue. We also need to tell you about Able Auctions. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, don't worry. We have help. You can get that help by emailing sales@ableauctions.ca. Phone lines. Here we go. Thomas Drantz, Athletic Vancouver. Second hit this week on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drantzer?
Factoids. Let's go. Gentlemen, nice to be with you this morning. Coming at you live from the Best Western Regency in Abbotsford.
No way. You've set up shop at a hotel in Abbotsford.
I have. I'm ready to go.
I think I stayed there at a wedding once. How is it?
Great. Tremendous.
I can see a very positive Yelp review in some hotel's future.
Drantzer.
Glowing.
Mike and I were discussing what happened yesterday and what was said yesterday at Media Day. And yeah. Mike was saying, like, there was lots of little information out there. And I was saying, yeah, but all of it was kind of boring. Like, there wasn't anything really big that I could really sink my teeth into unless I'm not trying hard enough. So what was the big takeaway for you yesterday? Like, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes still aren't signed, right? And they're going to keep trying. So that it was kind of like a non-update. What was the other big stuff, or maybe there was something about the Pettersson and Hughes discussion that I missed?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't think there was a ton of huge breaking. Well, certainly there wasn't any breaking news, right? It felt like there were some stories that are simmering, right, but that aren't ready yet to be announced, unveiled, dealt with, unpacked, to be totally honest with you, just because of where the organization's at. And Pettersson and Hughes obviously are the big ones, like the biggest ones, because, you know, for me, I mean, those deals are going to be the biggest news that the Canucks did this offseason. In terms of positioning this Canucks team in the medium term and maybe even the long term, like, the outcome on those contracts will shape the immediate future of this organization. And they're not done, and those gentlemen will not be at camp. They will not be on the ice today. And, you know, not only is that suboptimal from a team perspective, but I do have a sense, and maybe you guys, maybe you gentlemen won't agree with me on this, but I do have a sense, too, that until Petey and Quinn are in camp, it's almost like muted the excitement around this organization, like around this team. With all the changes, and, you know, in July it felt like this, there was a lot of curiosity about what this team will look like. But fundamentally, I think Canucks fans who are hopeful about the shape that this rebuild has taken and about this the shape that this team might have, like, a lot of those hopes are pinned to Pettersson and Hughes. Those are the guys that people are excited to watch and talk about and, you know, see play, see bounce back. And until they're signed, you know, it just feels like, you know, we're basically, you know, in a waiting room. We're in a waiting room, right, like fighting for the Life magazines. And so, you know, we'll see. The other piece of news, Jason, that sort of perked my ears up was the lingering uncertainty about Travis Hamonic, right? You know, Jim Benning had said that everyone will be 100% vaccinated. He's confident by the start of the regular season. On your airwaves on 650 later that day, I told the People Show that, you know, Hamonic was had a valid reason for flying in and would be on the ice today. And, you know, we'll see. Like, we'll see. I'm not exactly sure that the die has been cast on that story either. So, you know, we've got a couple hours before the players hit the ice here, and we'll see exactly what this looks like. But I think until I see, you know, that number 27 hit the ice at training camp, I'm going to be wondering if this story is going to take another turn yet.
It's a good point to bring up, because there's all these sort of little smaller stories that are percolating. And that's kind of what caught me yesterday, because I'm looking at them saying there's seven guys that aren't going to be there at the start of training camp, essentially. And the only ones that we really know why are Pettersson and Hughes. We know Tyler Motte has an undisclosed upper body injury that he got surgery on, and that's going to hold him out maybe until the start of the regular season, but we don't know a lot about that. We know Brandon Sutter is undergoing tests for fatigue. We learned that yesterday, but we don't really know exactly what that's all about. The Justin Bailey one seems pretty straightforward. He got COVID, so he was held back at the border in Buffalo, and he won't be here for another 10 days. Bo Horvat was held out, precautionary measures, because he wasn't feeling well. It just all seems like there's a lot of things that we didn't get a lot of clarity about yesterday.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Like how Canucks is that, right? You make all these changes, you go into the season, everyone's curious to see what this new group looks like, right? One of the big messages at Media Day is, you know, we're really excited to integrate all these new faces at training camp. And then it's like, they might hit the ice with, you know, down seven or eight guys.
Yeah.
Depending on how this all plays out. I mean, that is a very Canucks little wrinkle. But yeah, I mean, you know, it adds some intrigue into seeing exactly what these groups look like, exactly who is on the ice and why. But, you know, at least yesterday, we didn't have a ton of clarity on all that's going on. And I do expect we'll get an awful lot more as today unfolds. And then we're just waiting on Pettersson and Hughes. And, you know, that's a really interesting one to unpack here, I think, because, I mean, they're such big deals, and we're getting to a point where, you know, they are two of the last three remaining restricted free agents unsigned. Like, is there a world where Brady Tkachuk gets done here at some time during training camp, and the Canucks are the only team with outstanding RFAs, and they're probably the two best RFAs? I mean, maybe you can make the argument for Kaprizov, but, I mean, they're probably the two best RFAs in the entire league. Both on one team, both unsigned, and they're the only guys lingering on the market. Like, I think that's, you know, a very realistic possibility. Like, to the point where, you know, if I try and empathize with the cutthroat mentality that you have to have in trying to maximize a client's compensation, right? Like, what would I be doing, right? I'd be like, well, let's drag our feet until Tkachuk signs.
Right.
That would honestly be my approach at this point. So, you know, I do think that's a realistic possibility. And, you know, I'm curious to see how much that cranks up the pressure locally on the organization itself.
Dranser, I've targeted a signing time for PD and Hughes, and it's next week between their exhibition games on Monday and Friday. There's 3 days there. And that just seems like a good time. Like, you'll miss training camp, you'll miss a couple preseason games, everything will come to a boil, and both sides will come to their senses and realize, like, hey, we got to get these guys signed, but also, hey, it's best if we're in, you know, we get a little bit of practice time and a little bit of preseason time so that we're at our best, because there's going to be individual pressure on these players too. Like, they probably don't want to go into the season cold, because they know how much people will be watching them when they do return. And if they do return late, like, and they don't play well and they're a little bit rusty, I know they've been training together, I know they'll be in shape, blah, blah, blah. But if they are a little bit rusty, like, they're going to be criticized. And I was thinking about the power play and how it was dreadful last season, and how there's probably going to be some new ideas for the power play. Like, wouldn't you want to practice that in practice and get a bunch of reps and practice that in the preseason before the games start to count for real?
Yeah, for sure you would. And I mean, don't underrate that factor, right? Like, this is not fun at this moment, and especially today, as today rolls out, and as, you know, images of guys skating, you know, percolate across social media, and you know, reports from teammates start to hit their text message inboxes, and on and on. Like, this is not fun for anybody, right? For especially from a player's perspective. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right. That makes sense to me. I wouldn't be shocked by something settling a little bit earlier. You know, Jim Benning hinted they're close. The sense I get talking to people around the industry is maybe they're not quite as close, or maybe there's not quite as much optimism all around as Benning projected. But you know, in a general manager's chair, you sometimes project a level of optimism that maybe isn't quite extant for a variety of different reasons. But, you know, I also think close isn't necessarily like, is it close or are they far apart? Like, I often don't think that's useful framing in negotiations, because you're never close until you are. Like, by the time you're close, you've basically agreed to terms and you're just haggling over details. You know, it is an interesting process here, though. And I think, you know, it's an interesting process that's become even more interesting with some of what's occurred here across the NHL over the last couple of days. Like, I look at Kaprizov, and I don't really think that's a super, you know, interesting comp for Pettersson personally, just because while the points per game are the same, the length of the deal, 5 years, like, that would only buy one UFA year for Pettersson, right? Like, it bought two for Kaprizov. I mean, that fundamentally jukes sort of the value that you're talking about. Like, if that assumed value or that implied value of the UFA years for Kaprizov is like 10 or 11 million, I mean, you can see what impact it would have to remove one of those on the AAV, right? Like, you're still talking about like 4 times 8.5 being sort of the comp. If you're translating it over to PD, like it, you know, and there's no way the Canucks are going to sign a 4-year deal for him. So, you know, the one that I did think moved things, or at least reframed discussions, was probably Rasmus Dahlin in Buffalo. And that's because 3 times 6 kind of detonates the most recent bridge deal framework that we've been looking at for defensemen, which is still, you know, that 4.5 to 5 million times 3 range for Sergachev, McAvoy, and Werenski. Like, that's now done. We now have Dahlin at 6 times 3. And in every aspect of the game, Hughes is the superior player, right? Like, every single aspect of the game, Hughes is better than Rasmus Dahlin to this point in their careers. I do think that's an inconvenient comp for the Canucks, and doubly inconvenient because part of the reason that the Buffalo Sabres valued Dahlin that way is that they actually had to hit the cap floor. I do think that that deal came in, and I just thought, ooh, that's a tough hit from the perspective of a Canucks negotiator.
We're speaking to Thomas Drantz of The Athletic Vancouver here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Canucks training camp gets underway from Abbotsford later today. Drantz is already on the scene at the fantastic Best Western in Abbotsford. Drantz, yesterday some of the news that came out was that the Canucks did indeed go the PTO route. They signed veteran forward Alex Chiasson to a professional tryout offer. Now, is this just to make up for the 7 guys that aren't in camp? Like, this is a camp filler? Or does this guy have an actual legitimate chance of earning a contract and making the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a legitimate chance of earning a contract and making the team. But I don't think it's going to be straightforward. There's a lot of bodies still competing for those spots. But once you lose Mott and Bailey, I think it makes sense to add, you know, another big body into the mix. The one thing Chiasson doesn't have that an awful lot of the other hopefuls do is speed, right? Like, that's the one aspect of his game that's not, that's a problem, right? Not a problem, but a concern, right? Like, his foot speed is not a strength of his game. Where Chiasson really excels, though, like, really excels, like, is really good, is on the power play, right? Power play net front guy, he's excellent. And his 5-on-5 scoring can be a little spotty, but he's roughly neutral value there. That's about what you're looking for in a fourth liner. But his power play ability is really, really good. And I always like the idea of having a fourth liner who can contribute meaningfully in a special teams role like that. Like, I always think that's a smart way of building out a fourth line. You know, if you, in your mind's eye, think about like Mott, Sutter, Chase on, it's like, hey, that's a really good fourth line. Like, that's a really good fourth line with a ton of utility in a ton of different places. One thing I've been thinking about, though, is, you know, if you have a fourth line guy on this team with the way it's currently built, with Hoglander and Pod Colson, like young players projected to fill two middle six roles, right? It kind of limits your available penalty killers. And I do think the way that the Canucks build out their fourth line, they're going to have to be conscious of trying, at least to the best extent that they can, to build a fourth line where all three guys are penalty killers, right? Like all three guys are guys you're putting out on the penalty kill. And the reason for this is, I mean, just go through it. Like if you need four forwards to be pretty regular on the PK, right? So if you have Mott and Sutter and Dickinson, right? Three guys, and it sort of helps you out.
Yeah.
You've got Bud Colson and Hoglander, and you'd assume that the Canucks are going to be reluctant to play them in that spot. Like, where do you go to next?
JT,
you
know, Miller, Tanner maybe, Pearson, but then it's more minutes.
Right, yeah. Because if you go to JT Miller, he's probably the next guy up on ability, right? But then you're playing him 23 minutes a night again, and then you're getting those turnovers again. You know, like that's how this works. You're not getting most efficient usage out of one of your most important players. Paul Horvat, you know, it just doesn't work. Tanner Pearson, he's fine there. Like, he's fine, but really you want him to be a guy pressed into that duty because of injury. You know, or you know, do you have the stones to try Hoglander or Pod Colson there? I mean, those are sort of your options. So, you know, I like Chiasson a lot as, you know, a fourth liner who can score a bit, provide some offense, certainly a physical presence, like a big body. Those are all good attributes, but I do sort of think that in an ideal world, the Canucks will find, you know, a third, fourth liner when Sutter and Mott get healthy, who also can kill penalties, because otherwise I do think you're going to end up overtaxing JT Miller.
I can already read the next Drancer piece on The Athletic. Why the Canucks will actually miss Louis Erickson.
No, I'm not doing that. Sorry, boys.
Drancer, you talked to Travis Green over the summer, and you're going to talk to him a lot more at training camp.
Lucky Travis.
One of the big stories from last season early on when the Canucks were really struggling was that we haven't had enough practice time. What do you think the Canucks are really going to be focusing on in training camp and in practice during the preseason as they ramp up for the real games?
Yeah, I'm expecting a lot of teaching on structure and on coverage, especially with all the new bodies on the back end. I'm expecting that to happen a lot earlier than usual. Maybe not today. Today's usually just the bag skate. But I think very early on, we're going to start to see some drills that are focused on, you know, really drilling down on defensive zone structure, neutral zone structure, play away from the puck, how the club wants to play away from the puck. I do think that's going to be a point of emphasis for a variety of reasons. And among them is that the club has all these new faces. But I also think there is a, you know, there is a desire, I think, from the Canucks head coach to play a more organized game. Like, I think there's an annoyance at this notion, right, that, like, he's this high-octane offensive coach, you know? I don't think that's how he views himself. Like, I don't think that's how Green views himself. I don't think that's how he views his coaching abilities. I don't think that's how he views his system. And I think he wants to show that he can play a lockdown style. Like, I think he wants to show that he can coach a team that, you know, plays a more organized, systematic defensive game. And for all of that, I mean, I think that's going to be really tough to do with the personnel that he's got. Like, I think it's going to be very difficult. And, you know, I look through this defense, and I've said it on this program a couple times, and no one likes to hear it, but, you know, I think it's going to be really hard for this Canucks defense to be better, even, than the super permissive group we saw in 2021.
Who's like, the shutdown pair this year? This is the question we asked last season, and it was it was Edler and Schmidt, and they weren't all that great. I know you can point to some underlying stats, but like that wasn't.
Well, it's not underlying stats. They played 540 minutes against the toughest competition in the league.
Yeah,
you know, or in the North Division anyway, and they were even. Like, the Canucks were outscored by 36 at even strength, but not when that pair was on the ice at all.
Because Edler kept on taking penalties, and he got off the ice. that was why. Regardless, Drance, I don't really want to argue about the Edler-Schmidt shutdown pairing. Both those guys are gone now, so who is the shutdown pairing this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the club will hope that it's Pullman, Tucker Pullman, who played, you know, some shutdown minutes with Josh Morrissey in Winnipeg last year, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And yet, my expectation, my strong expectation, when we see the Canucks take line rushes today, is that the club will open camp with Myers and Oliver Ekman-Larsson as a pair.
Yikes.
And you know, one thing, the reason that I think they'll do that is, you know, fundamentally it comes down to, you know, what sort of respect are veteran players owed, right? And Pullman, despite his contract, like, this is a guy who's played 120 NHL games. Like, he's played fewer NHL games than Madison Bowie. You know, like, I just think that they will not, like, I think that they will give Myers that assignment off the hop, like the top four line rush off the hop, because regardless of fit, you know, he's the guy with the long NHL resume, and that sort of matters, especially as you open a training camp. You know, and then I'm curious to see, like, first of all, I'm curious to see if Hamonic's on the ice, but if he is, you know, which of the lefties, like, who plays with Yolevi, Hunt, and Rathbone? And does that tell us anything about the pecking order heading into what's going to be one of the most, you know, closely watched roster battles in camp? Those are sort of the two things that I'm looking to see along the blue line. But I do think in terms of fit, in terms of, you know, how this works in an ideal world for the club, I do think Pullman OEL is sort of their preference.
Is Brad Hunt good defensively?
Like, he's not a stopper. He's an offensive defenseman, okay. But he's not a problem defensively by any means. Like, he's a good player. I just don't think you want him in Tufts. Like, he's not a guy. You know,
do you want Rathbone in Tufts? Do you want Yolevi in Tufts? Like, it's kind of like, you know what I mean?
It,
like,
basically has to be OEL.
Yeah. No, I'm just talking about who might have. I'm trying to determine who might have the lead in that battle for that third pair, and I'm not saying that third pair is going to be playing the Tufts or whatever. I'm just trying to figure out who Travis Green is going to be most comfortable with. Is it going to be Brad Hunt, Ole Yulevi, or Jack Rathbone?
Yeah, I mean, I on the left side, it's really interesting because I think it's pretty clear that OEL will play the Tufts, and you know, Quinn Hughes will probably lead the team in 5-on-5. Ice time. So, even though that's not, you know, in curtailed deployment, right? Like not loaded toward the defensive zone in terms of where he starts and, you know, not being the matchup guy when the Canucks are able to dictate that. So, you know, the third pair guy, you know, I don't think they'll play Tufts. I do think their defensive solidity will be an important part of who wins the job. And, you know, we saw Ole Yolevi play last year a fair bit, like 24 games. And, you know, his usage was incredibly prescribed, right? Like incredibly prescribed. He was sheltered with extraordinary discipline to be kept away from top six competition. So, you know, while his game and his size might hint at like the player who is the most defensively solid of the three, like the club's usage of him last year was, you know, not very trusting, right? Like it was very much kid gloves. And so, you know, we'll see. I don't think you look at any of those three guys and say that's the guy that, you know, will have the most trust defensively. I honestly think that's not sort of the way to look at it. I just think it's going to come down to, you know, who plays the best at camp, who looks like they can help the team the best, who looks the sturdiest in terms of that role. And I'm really curious to see how it plays out because I do think with the raw ability that Jack Rathbone has, you know, he's certainly the guy who could help the team the most in terms of raising their ceiling of what we can expect. But will he be ready to do that? Will he show in preseason that he's ready to do that? Just in terms of fitting into that structure, in terms of the reads, in terms of the neutral zone positioning, in terms of the defensive zone positioning, you know, I bet yes. I think Jack Rathbone's about to make a pretty strong case here. I think we'll be having a very different conversation in a couple of weeks, but you know, can't count out Brad Hunt. And I don't think you can count out Ulev either, especially in the event that he's had the type of offseason where he comes in and his skating stride looks, you know, not a ton better. I'm not expecting worlds better, but 2% better would make a huge difference in terms of permitting him to defend in space.
Drancer, thanks a lot for doing this morning, bud. Go enjoy the continental breakfast, and we will talk again on Tuesday, I believe. And we'll have a bow on training camp, and we'll get to look back on the Canucks' first preseason game as well.
Oh, we are blessed. Hopefully they have Fruit Loops. See you, gentlemen.
Bye. See you, buddy. Thanks. Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Do you like when you go travel? Remember, we used to do it all the time. We used to travel a lot.
I miss traveling.
Were you a continental breakfast guy? Like, if there was a free continental breakfast, would you hit it?
I would. I would not sit for it, but I would grab stuff.
You're grabbing go guy.
I would grab pastries and croissants. Like, I love pastries and baked goods in the morning.
You're a morning carb guy,
big time. Yeah. I'm a carb guy overall.
Yeah.
I tried the keto diet for 5 minutes, and I was like, I'm hungry and grouchy.
Need some bread.
Yeah, it was awful.
There, I remember we went to it's the DoubleTree. It's an unbelievable free continental breakfast. They have a waffle maker. That, to me, takes it to the next level.
When you were like a child.
Remember
when you were a kid and like in a hotel, or mm-hmm. you'd almost prefer a motel?
Yeah.
Because you're like, you can just drive right to your door. This is amazing. And there's a pool right there. And it's like terrible pool or whatever.
Everything at ground level. That's what you needed.
I remember,
there's no stairs.
I remember we on like a family vacation, Griswold type, we stayed at a Howard Johnson, and I was like, this is luxury.
The Hojo The Hojo back in the day.
And he plays for the Mets.
It let you know that you were at a pretty sweet hotel. If it had more than two floors. We stayed in one of those old school two-floor motels in Nashville. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a
when
throwback.
You stole all the towels.
Yeah, and they had ashtrays like every 5 meters.
Yeah, you don't get those very often. No. This morning's Halford and Brough Regal Grooming Lounge poll question. Who has a better chance of making the playoffs, the Blue Jays or the Canucks? The Blue Jays fell out of the wild card spot yesterday with a loss in Tampa against their arch nemesis, the Tampa Bay Rays. Things got a little nasty in that one. A fight over a data card.
Not even a fight, really, because no punches were exchanged. Just a beanball.
Yeah, but it's like that's like very baseball. What are you guys fighting over? Data cards?
Stolen.
Information.
Stolen data cards.
But the Blue Jays are obviously still right in the thick of that race. They got a big series with the Yankees next week. That's going to be a lot of fun. The Blue Jays are getting 61.3% of the vote.
Yeah, I had nothing on this one going into it. I had no idea what the results would be. That seems totally within the realm of possibility. Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show, we're going to continue the Canucks conversation at 8 with Dan Murphy from Sportsnet, who will also be at training camp today. We've got some open time here between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. We will dive into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. At this point, I will also remind you, please get your What We Learns in. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Let us know. At 8:30, we will read these What We Learns on the air. That will be your chance to be on the radio. Lots more to come. Don't go anywhere. Keep it on the dial. It's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650.
Catherine, what's the good news?
You're driving me to Phoenix!
.736 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Hopefully your morning commute is going well. I haven't got too many terrible traffic reports yet, so that's good. Hopefully we are keeping this mildly entertaining on your drive and or SkyTrain ride and or bus ride. I suppose if you're taking a boat, you could be listening to us as well. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the fine folks at the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are also brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. We don't have a ton of time left in this hour. We got two quick segments coming up here, but we did want to touch on more Canucks stuff. This, of course, is your home of the Canucks. This, of course, is the kickoff to training camp today, Thursday. Later this morning, the Canucks will take to the ice for the first time. in Abbotsford.
So we've got a text in here from Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Has anyone considered that Benning won't be able to re-sign both Pettersson and Hughes? Perhaps we should look at the lack of success that has happened to Toronto by having too many elite players, which is weird to say, but I know what you mean, Greg. Greg continues, I wonder if Benning should look further into the future than 1 year, considering the other important players that will need to be re-signed, and look at the upside of both Pettersson and Hughes, then choose to keep one and trade the other for draft picks. That's not going to happen, Greg. They're going to sign them both.
They don't look at it that way. The only thing that might happen is that it might bleed into the regular season. Now, I've predicted that it won't, but that is the danger point right now, is that they start missing regular season games. And we're not there yet.
I'm still quite confident that they're going to get signed.
I know you are.
In the next week or so.
The biggest issue, again, and what separates it from the rest of the teams that had to deal with their restricted free agents, is that there is two, count them, two of significant prominence. Ottawa has to grind with one guy.
Yeah, but and they have unlimited cap space.
Not unlimited, well, but they have more.
I think they're actually below the floor right now.
Like still?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. They're actually, but if you go to cap friendly, they're the only team in the red. Yeah, and Buffalo has no cap constraints either, which is why they were able to get the Rasmus Dahlin contract done. They're like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, here, take this money. It's a little more complicated. Actually, that's a lot more complicated for the Canucks. Even if they negotiate the short-term deals with Pettersson and Hughes, how to structure those deals is complicated. Mm-hmm. And how much to pay them, too. So they're just going to have to keep grinding away. I do think that both sides will come to their senses, because I realize that Pettersson and Hughes have quite a bit of leverage here, in that they can be like, you're really going to start the season without us? And they can kind of be like, yeah, I'll call your bluff on that one, with the pressure that this team is under to start well and to not have the season get off track like it did last season, have their best team out there and see what happens with that. But I also think there's always pressure on the players. And it's almost like a FOMO thing. We've heard it so many times from players. We heard it from Brock Besser the other day when he was talking about when his contract negotiation was going on, and you start seeing your teammates out on the ice and you start following along and you're like, I want to be there. I feel bad about not being there. And that's when you start calling your agent and you go like, listen, I know we're in a negotiation here and I know you've done this before. I know you're the expert, but I want to play hockey.
Maybe that's why Pat Brisson sent Elias Pettersson to Michigan to hang out with Quinn Hughes to lessen the effects of FOMO. Because at least if you got one of your boys, you're not missing all your boys.
Right.
By the way, Quinn Hughes...
They're practicing the power play together. Like, why not? Give me another one-timer,
it's
like Quinn.
It's mostly just the two of us anyway. We may as well just work on it out here. Quinn Hughes was surfing yesterday.
Surfing?
Yeah, according to Jackie Spiegel of the Sporting News.
How are you surfing in Michigan?
He was wake surfing.
Oh, wakeboarding.
Because Jack Hughes told her, quote, yeah, Quinn's good. He was surfing last night. He's doing well. The deal will get done soon.
Oh, okay. So I don't know the difference between, is there a difference between wakeboarding and wake surfing?
I don't know. Dom lived in Kelowna for a minute. You must know.
What's the difference between wakeboarding and wake surfing?
Or are they just the same terms?
Wake surfing is when you are surfing on the wake of the boat.
Oh, and you're not actually...
You're not being pulled by
There's no line, right? I've seen that. Yeah. Sorry. So you're up further, right? You're almost like right beside the boat?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
If you have any more Kelowna-related questions, don't hesitate to ask.
How much does a tattoo of barbed wire cost?
In Kelowna, it's free. It comes with your birth certificate.
It's the starter kit. All right. So there's that story in the bank. I should mention that camps are opening around the National Hockey. There's a lot of stories that we haven't got caught up on that have been kind of percolating, but now they get pushed to the forefront. So we talked at length about the Jack Eichel situation in Buffalo. If you're just tuning in now and you missed it, the Sabres and their general manager, Kevin Adams, had their introductory training camp presser this morning where they stripped Jack Eichel of the captaincy and then told the media that he failed his physical and they're still at odds over his health. So that's going swimmingly in Buffalo, as it always does. In Pittsburgh, no Sidney Crosby, no Evgeny Malkin. That's a big story. In Washington, they're going to open camp without Nicholas Backstrom. Mm-hmm. He's going to be hurt as well.
All the old centers are just like...
Life is tough.
Yeah.
speaking of old centers, David Krejci, no longer a member of the Boston Bruins. And that's a pretty big hole in their lineup because he's been like the prototypical safety blanket 2C.
He's been so underrated in his career too.
Forever.
Yeah.
First bite at the apple, the 2C spot that's available now after what, a decade at least? Mm-hmm. Charlie Coyle in Boston. So there's something to keep an eye on for you fantasy guys out there. And then, yeah, go ahead.
We got a bunch of texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line about TV and the Canucks. The Canucks play Sunday in Spokane against Seattle and Monday in Abbotsford against the Calgary Flames. I can find no evidence of these games being on TV. And I know Murph texted us and said, we're not doing Sunday in Spokane.
Sunday.
Or Monday in Abbotsford. We got a text in the other day that said the game might be on Kong TV, not King TV, Kong TV in Seattle. But I just looked at the guide and there's no evidence of that. And NBC in Seattle, they're going to be playing Sunday Night Football in the Ryder Cup on Sunday. So I don't think they're going to be like, and we're going to cut out of Sunday Night Football for this preseason action from Spokane.
Let's go to Spokane. As far as I understand it, and again, we don't know a lot on this show, despite the hours of prep that we do. Vancouver-Calgary on Friday, October 1st, is the first televised preseason game from a Sportsnet perspective. This very fine company that we work for, Sportsnet. That is Friday, October 1st. That's from the Saddle Dome. That's a 6 o'clock puck drop.
And that's the game I've predicted that. Well, I don't know if Pettersson and Hughes
Pettersson
would play
and Hughes
that.
Know that it's being televised, so but they want to get in on that action.
Again, I just wanted to reiterate this. I don't know if it'll mean anything, but it just kind of makes sense. Like, if there's a window for Pettersson and Hughes for those contracts to be signed and be announced, like, next week the Canucks have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday off. I'm sure they'll be practicing then, but there are no games. It just seems like a convenient time to me to get it done.
Right.
So that there's still 5 games left in the preseason and some practice time, but each side has, you know, like gone up to the wire or whatever, and they've, you know, things have gotten interesting, and there's been preseason games missed and training camp has been missed, and maybe then they'll come to their senses. Put it this way. If it's not done by next week, then you start to go, oh, like, how are they going to solve this?
Dom has an update on the broadcast side of things with regards to televised preseason games.
So the game on the 26th, the Sunday, that is actually going to be televised on Root Sports Northwest. Now, unfortunately, I don't believe it is possible to watch that channel up here, but it is being televised.
Root Sports Northwest.
The game in Abbotsford, oddly enough, even though it's north of the border, not on TV. So I wonder if the Canucks will have it on a Canucks TV live stream.
Live stream or something like that. Is that the one camera at the top of the arena?
For sure. Yeah.
Well, you know,
I like this wide angle view.
But I do believe we'll have it on Sportsnet 650. So
it's funny. It's funny when Canada was in the early stages of its World Cup qualifying and it was on one soccer, a lot of the places that they had to go, like Haiti, for example, they just had the one camera. Right, the old school single cam shot. You're 1,000 yards away from the playing surface. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of know based on the colors of the jerseys who's who, but outside of that,
it was actually from a drone.
Game. Yeah, like I'm not joking. It might have been. There were some games. The one they did over in Victoria when the Canucks when the Whitecaps lost to Pacific and Mark DeSantos got fired. Right. Also, the single camera pan shot. It's like when your uncle takes the video camera on vacation and spends 19 hours shooting whale watching.
Right.
It's that kind of like vibe to it.
Didn't Pacific win again?
Oh, and did they? I didn't.
I think they beat Cavalry FC.
Take that. Cavalry.
Aren't those two teams that, who are two teams that beat the Whitecaps, Alex?
Those would be them.
Yeah.
They did. You're right, Jason. And now, get caught up on CPL talk.
And now they're going to play TFC. But does TFC have to come out to Vancouver Island now? That'd be cool. I don't even know where the location of that game would be.
We'll double check at the break. And we're going to go to break right now. We'll come back with a real quick segment before we get to Dan Murphy from Sportsnet. It's all right here on your home of the Canucks, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.
The official financial sponsor of Halford and Brough is ZLC Financial. And ZLC's scope is really second to none. They're a one-stop shop for all your financial advice. They're experts in tax planning, financial planning, employee benefits, wealth accumulation. And here's the key part, wealth preservation, because once you accumulate the wealth, then you want to preserve the wealth. To learn more, visit ZLC.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.
.751 on a Thursday. It's the start of training camp, everybody. Get excited! Seven guys are missing. Alfred and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, let Able Auctions help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether it's a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca.
We got a text in from Vance in the Loop about Evander Kane.
Loops, plural. I think it's Kamloops.
What did I say? Loop?
Yeah.
Vance in the... Oh, I meant to say Loops. Sorry. Vance in the Loops. Can San Jose terminate Evander Kane's contract? If so, why haven't they? I'm very curious about this, too. That's a great question, Vance. Obviously, Evander Kane, yesterday, I'm sure you saw the news. He was kind of jumped out of the frying pan into the fire. Mm-hmm. He was cleared of the gambling allegations, but the NHL said in their investigation of the gambling allegations, they came across other allegations. They didn't say what those were. I imagine that to terminate a contract, you have to build a pretty solid case first. And maybe that's what could happen here. If those allegations are serious enough, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a CBA expert like Thomas Drantz, so I don't know what the requirements are to terminate that contract. But I know that Kane was a good player for them last year, but he is untradeable at this point.
Yep.
And San Jose would love to terminate that contract. Well, I bet.
And they missed the buyout windows, plural, where they could have.
Well, they don't want to buy him out either. That costs them money.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is their option now is to try and...
They might have to buy out some other guys, too.
Right. Now, he's still owed quite a bit of money. He's basically roughly halfway through a seven-year, $49 million deal with a $7 million cap hit.
And, you know, a few people have texted in and said, should the Canucks, you know... Some person said, I know he's a cancer, but if they can get him for cheap, no.
Nope. Just no.
He's a bad teammate.
Just no. It's not going to happen. Just put it this way. The Evander Kane story right now is that he's not at training camp with the San Jose Sharks. I would not expect him to be with the San Jose Sharks during training camp. Quite frankly, I don't expect him to play for the San Jose Sharks this season.
I don't even know if he's ever going to play an NHL game again.
Right, because he has a lot of issues going on right now. A lot. And more allegations continue to come out seemingly every day.
Evander Kane's life right now seems like, you know those movies where someone's life starts out really well? And then it falls apart, and watching it is stressful.
Yeah.
That's what it's like.
And also that it almost feels like the hockey side of things, this is going to sound weird, but he's good on, like, hockey's not the problem.
Hockey's not the problem. He's a good player.
He played really well last year. It's everything else. So maybe it's time that hockey gets put on the back burner so he can focus on getting his life in order. We've got a lot more to get to on this program. Dan Murphy is going to join us coming up next on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. But before we go to break, I need to pass along a message about UNICEF. The pandemic ends for no one until it ends for everyone. UNICEF is leading the procurement and delivery of 2 billion COVID-19 vaccines to countries around the world. An effort of this scale has never been done before. By donating to UNICEF Canada by September 30th, Canadians have the opportunity to make a difference and support the vaccination of millions of people in lower income countries. Every dollar donated by September 30th will be matched by the Canadian government. If you want to donate today at unicef.ca. Alternatively, you can text vaccines to 45678, and that will donate $10. It's the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.